Today is Wednesday, June the 26th, 2024. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to hank@pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, which is www.prn.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Alan Katz, 81, passed away last Thursday, June the 20th. Peacefully surrounded by Sally, his beloved wife of 55 years, and daughters Alicia and Tova. He had been battling advanced cancer that only became known a month ago. He was a co-founder of the Trenton Computer Festival. The Trenton Computer Festival is the oldest and longest-running tech fair in the world. It was created in 1976 as an annual educational event with speakers, forums, and user group meetings, an exhibitor area, and an outdoor flea market. Alan holds multiple world records in experimental high-frequency radio communications and was instrumental in pioneering EME, or Earth-Moon-Earth communications. A distinguished professor of electrical engineering at the College of New Jersey, Alan has taught and mentored thousands of students in his 54 years there. Prior to starting a successful satellite communications business, Alan was an IEEE fellow, holds multiple aerospace and communication patents, and has been a consultant to many aerospace projects and programs with Bell Labs, Martin Marietta, Lockheed Martin, and RCA Aerospace. He will be missed. Now is not the time to buy a new Windows PC. Unless, of course, you have an immediate need. Hold off on upgrading your laptop or PC now. Big tech announcements from Intel, AMD, Qualcomm, and Apple have just been made. New Snapdragon X Elite chip for ARM laptops, AMD Ryzen Strix Point, and Intel Lunar Lake chips promise major performance boosts. Get ready for new GPUs from NVIDIA, AMD, and Intel, along with Apple's M4 chip. Big changes across the tech industry are imminent. While it's always tempting to go out and buy the latest laptops or check out the latest and greatest gaming PCs, it's now not a good time to do either right now. With Computex and WWDC, that's the Worldwide Developer Conference, June the 20th, 24, has been a flurry of tech news and releases. We got some major announcements from Intel, AMD, Qualcomm, and even Apple. With so much on the horizon, it might be wise to hold off on that upgrade and see that all these companies have in store for us. First reports are coming in, and the x86 emulation is the Achilles heel of the Qualcomm's new PC chips. This should shock no one. In early emulation testing of Qualcomm's new Snapdragon X Elite laptops, the Microsoft Qualcomm Prism emulation layer delivered impressive gaming performance from proper PC games. But now that early reviews are starting to trickle out, the news isn't nearly so promising. It's all about the performance hit when it comes to gaming under that emulation layer. On a selection of games tested, there's a report of occasional stutter in the games. It is reported completely a software issue. But if you plan on doing any sort of gaming, you're not going to have the best experience right now. Now, none of this should come as a surprise. When it was first announced, Qualcomm was making a PC chip and would be releasing laptop silicon to run Windows with an emulation layer for x86 applications. I had questioned if the emulation layer would be able to handle 100% of all x86 applications. My recommendation then was to delay buying a Windows PC with an ARM CPU. Maybe it was surprised that so many games did just work and wanted to shout about that, but if the performance is half that of an equivalent x86 machine, it's a tough one to get too excited about right now. The sleep performance of the X Elite processor is very impressive, and that is absolutely something you cannot say for any laptop running Windows in an x86 environment. Shut the lid of your laptop, and you can be pretty confident after a day of sleep it will have run the battery dry. The X Elite, however, reportedly only lose something like 1 or 2% of its battery life overnight. Reports are the hardware is very good, but it's all about the software apps and the software emulation layers, and those are the things that will improve over time. This is not the time to buy new hardware as it is evolving and ask what software applications will run without issues. Rather, it's what applications you need and what hardware will meet those requirements. The Windows PC running with Qualcomm new Snapdragon X Elite with a Microsoft Qualcomm Prism emulation layer today is just not ready for prime time. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how all of this is constantly changing. And Stephen reached out to me, how can I stay connected with my colleagues while working remotely? Okay, and this was part, I boiled that down. This was a longer message, but I'm going to approach this from the standpoint of I'm a remote employee, I do the radio show stuff on a regular basis, but I also have a day job, and I work for a Fortune 500 company, and I have a specialty within that, and I am remote. We have a number of employees that are remote. We have a number of employees who are based out of certain locations, and they are hybrids, and some that work right in the office. So staying connected across the board is very important. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about is stuff that we are doing on a daily basis. And it works. Okay, first off, regular check-ins. And these regular check-ins should be on a daily basis or a weekly basis with the team. And this is the whole team. And you talk about different things that are going on. And you can, and I encourage this, you can keep this lighthearted, keep this on the level of allowing some water cooler gossip, allowing some of the more casual conversations, and without somebody standing there and saying, well, we got to talk about business, we got to keep this serious, no messing around. No, I will tell you, connecting with people is not a matter of, so this week's profit reports say that we are down 0.02%. And all of that dry stuff, I will tell you, where I'm working right now, that we don't do the dry profit. I mean, we talk about it once a month or so. Somebody will talk about, hey, this is where the business is going. We're keeping you informed. And we keep it lighthearted while we're doing it. It's a matter of that's how you've got to do it. You've got to include, just like the modern, I'll tell you, movies. We used to have these superhero movies, and Superman would come swooping in, and whoever it was, the hero would come in, and it would be all serious. Or the action movies, they would be all very dry and just a bunch of action. Today, that doesn't fly. You've got to include comedy. You've got to have comedy writers on the staff taking it to some absurd levels. And I'll tell you, keeping it lighthearted is how you keep it interesting. So next up, those regular check-ins, key thing. And we do it, we've got daily check-ins, weekly check-ins, and we are constantly communicating like we would in the office. So we keep up that same thing, but we keep it a little bit more official, more scheduled, more structured. Still fun, but structured. Utilizing communication tools, and I don't care if you're using Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Slack or whatever it is, you should be able to utilize any of these different tools, and you should be doing it on a regular basis. I will tell you, we chat with each other. We are typing different things in. Even during those regular check-ins, we might send some side comments to our better friends. Little jokes, little, oh, hey, that reminds me, whatever it is. But we're making utilization of that communication effort. And I will tell you, I feel like we are better communicators when we're all spread out like that because we're trying to communicate off to the side. There are conversations, valuable conversations that occur that could not occur if we were in some boardroom. Oh yeah. You're in a conference room and everybody's there and they're listening to whoever's up at the front and all of a sudden you're passing notes and is that something you should be talking about right now? No, look, I will tell you, Microsoft Teams, that's what we use where I'm at. It's great, and it's wonderful. Next up, being proactive. You need to reach out. You need to find a couple of your colleagues, and you need to have casual chats. 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You would normally take a coffee break. Look, find out about someone. Find out a little bit more. Remember that. Learn about everybody you're working with. What is their family like? What are their kids like? What is their life situation like? Bond with them. I know it's hard. It feels hard, but I'll tell you, it's valuable. And those are the people you can rely on when you need support. Those are the people that you can rely on when you've got a problem with another coworker. Look, make friends. Be proactive. Find them. Now, there used to be the usual social events. Look, social events can still occur. They can still happen. They're now virtual. You can arrange for all kinds of team builders, and those team builders can be absolutely fun. Get together and play some online game against each other. And I don't care whether it's you guys are playing virtual poker or you're playing Counter-Strike or one of these video games where you're just shooting up everything. It's all about gathering together, being social, and having fun together. Lastly, share your achievements. Regularly get together and talk about your successes and acknowledge other people's successes. This is going to help build that positive team environment. And you know where we do that? On our daily check-ins, on our weekly check-ins, on all of these different things. And we start building each other up. We build the company up. And that is how you're going to be more successful. That's how you're going to stay connected with your colleagues when you're working remotely. You're just duplicating what you would normally do in person and improving on it where you can. It's absolutely great. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Back about 38 years ago, I met with Bill Gates at the Comdex show in Las Vegas. In a November 1986 recorded interview, we covered topics related to the past, present, and future of the personal computer industry back in 1986 from his perspective. The tape of the interview was initially lost, but has since been rediscovered in 2013. I've been asked by many to rebroadcast the interview for a retrospective view.
Good evening. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key, your host this evening. Tonight's program is on tape, so please don't try to call. We will now broadcast an interview with Bill Gates. Bill is the chairman of Microsoft Corporation, which is the largest independent software company in the United States. Bill was very gracious to spare time from his very busy schedule to share with us his views of yesterday, today, and tomorrow in personal computing. This interview was done on a patio of a hotel, and we had roaring airplanes and every conceivable noise there was, so the sound quality is not to our usual par, but I think the interview itself will speak for itself. Since 1975, the personal computing industry has taken on explosive growth, and I consider you one of the leading pioneers, definitely, in the industry. But who else do you think have made a mark in the personal computing industry since that time?
Well, 1975 is 10 years ago, and some of the early pioneers aren't involved anymore. But MITS, that had the original Altair computer.
Ed Roberts.
Ed Roberts was the designer of that. Gary Kildall, who's the author of CPM, is still involved in the industry. He was a key person at the time.
He's back as chairman now.
Right. Actually, he's rejoined full-time digital research. Another key pioneer, or the group of people at Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, although sometimes we don't think of them as directly associated with personal computers. It's really their ideas are some of the key things that are driving the innovations that have happened over the last 3 or 4 years. So people like Butler Lampson or Alan Kay, who were at the core of that group, doing research about the same time as PCs were getting going and doing things that we're only able to implement today.
They haven't received the notoriety yet.
No, and I don't know if they ever will. A lot of the people who were involved in those activities, like Charles Simone, who works for us, and a number of the people went on to Apple, like Larry Tesler, it's well known that, you know, they were there, and some people acknowledge it. But, no, I think Xerox's contribution will never be fully appreciated.
Well, one of the things that we have in the industry is what is called an XNS standard, which is a LAN standard, and it is Xerox standard.
Right. XNS and Ethernet are only two of the many, many things that came out of that research group.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of products do you feel has made a major impact since, in the past 10 years?
Well, the key that's fueling it all is the semiconductor industry is able to make better and better chips, and fortunately, that their almost magical capability to deliver more power at a constant price will continue at least for the next 10 years. So it's the, you know, first the 8080 and then the 8086 and then the 8286 and the 8386 that are sort of at the heart of driving what's going on. And it's really only with that power and extra memory that things like graphic user interface or an operating system that runs multiple applications or these more ambitious applications that we run now, it's only with the power that this has come to make sense.
That's interesting. Is software designed after the hardware is built, or do you build a hardware with software in mind?
Well, in the sense that when you come out with the next generation personal computer, you put it out in the very competitive software industry and hope that people use it in ways that you hadn't expected. In that sense, the software comes afterwards. I mean, if you take any machine, whether it was the Apple II or the original 8-bit machines or now the IBM PC, you know, the original designers didn't conceive of how far people would push those things and how much they would get out of it. But a lot of the inspiration for what are the key features to put into PCs come from software people, because they're the ones who are thinking about what benefits do we want to deliver to the end user. And so Microsoft in particular influenced the design of the 386, and we're now working with Intel on the chip that comes after the 386, and we play a pretty key role. Also, to get at the power of the hardware, you do need the key system software layers. And so those have to be there and designed essentially at the same time to think through what makes sense.
You think specific products like the Apple II and the IBM PC, their success is because they happen to be there at the right time, or the product itself made a difference?
Well, timing is very critical, because the value of a personal computer is really based on the software base that you build around it. And so they were positioned, well marketed, and they got momentum going that allowed them to build up a software base. So there have been a number of other products that, you know, just looking at the PC may have been superior, but those were the ones that really delivered a benefit with software. But all that aside, there were some key innovative features that came with the Apple II. It wasn't the first personal computer, but it was the first one to have bitmap graphics on the board. It was a very clever design, inexpensive to manufacture. The IBM PC was really the first 16-bit personal computer that let us go from machines that only supported 64K to now machines that support 640K, and even that's becoming a limitation for us.
We were talking about giants in the field. You seem to have left off Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
Oh, not intentionally. I mean, if I really wanted to do an exhaustive list, it would be very long. They belong very high on the list of great contributors, both because of the specific product and the vision they brought, and the way their company not only did the product, but also helped build up the marketing channels and got very serious about a business that initially was really addressing hobbyists, and so was missing a lot of the things that were necessary for the growth that we've had.
Where do we go from here? What products do you think will have major impacts over the next 5 years?
Well, our vision is that towards the end of that five-year period, most of the desktops will have a PC on them. And we believe that those PCs will be tied together. So networking is very, very important. And networking today is hard to set up, very expensive, and there's a lot of needs both on the hardware and software side there. We also believe that that PC on every desktop will have a what we call graphic user interface, like the Macintosh provides or like we're providing with Microsoft Windows. And so that means the need for faster graphics chips, opportunity to do full-page displays so you can really see a lot of the document. We use electronic mail inside Microsoft as sort of the backbone of our communications. And the people who get large displays really don't want to give them up because it really increases the speed at which you can get information. Another key thing is this push towards faster processors. I mean, not everybody should buy an 8386 today because they're expensive and the software isn't there yet that takes full advantage of them. But certainly 3 to 4 years from now, I think the mainstream PCs will be based on the 8386, and we'll already have machines like the 8486.
8486?
Sure, wow. Out into the marketplace. The microprocessors go in about 3-year cycles, and so here at this Comdex, of course, we saw about 12 machines on the 8386. I'd say 3 years from now, you'll see the same thing based on the 8486.
You know, there were 462 vendors selling desktop publishing at Comdex. I don't know if you're aware of that. Where's that going?
Well, like all these markets, a few vendors will do good products, and things will get to be a lot simpler. I think to some degree, it's there's a herd effect where people are jumping in. Desktop publishing, yes, it's a very large opportunity, but to some degree, word processors will have built-in capability that let you do a lot of documents. The idea of doing page layout will be important, but a number of users won't really need that capability, and they'll find their word processor will take care of it. You probably saw we introduced a new word processor for the Mac Word 3, that has a number of these things, and it's very easy to get at them when they're all in with the word processor. I do think that if you look in a company and see what types of memos people put out on what kind of information they have, and then you go and look 5 years from now, there will be a real difference in the quality of communication. It'll just be so easy to build in a little graph or a little table and make a much more effective memo than you can today.
There's a couple of key things you said. You said desktop. You said network. You said company. What happened to home computing?
Well, the original charter of Microsoft, which hasn't changed at all, is to have a computer in every home and on every desk. I generally hesitate to talk about the home because that's further out, and people think I'm a little over-optimistic. But I absolutely believe it will be in every home. The challenge there is to come up with a machine that, in terms of educating or entertaining or providing information, actually is competitive with watching TV or reading books or getting the newspaper. And those media are very well developed. They're very, you know, inexpensive and portable. And it's going to take a new technology which allows the amount of storage of information on the PC to be, oh, say, 100 times greater than it is today before I think we can really compete and do the job right. That's not to say that you won't see a lot of personal computing at home where people have IBM PC-type machines or Macs where they're able to take their work back and forth. But in terms of really being part of the home life and activity, it's going to take, we think, compact disk ROM, CD-ROM-based machines with a whole new type of software that includes video and audio before you start to see the penetrations go into most of the homes.
You think, as you indicated, there'll be a new breed of computers for the home? Do you think there'll be a new set of manufacturers, or some of the existing manufacturers may turn that direction, like the Atari, the Commodore, and the Apple?
Well, I think the basic software we have around the IBM PC or MS-DOS standard is so strong that you'll want to carry that over into these machines, even as you're adding this new storage. And so I think mostly it'll be the current manufacturers. The one addition to that is, though, that some of the pure consumer electronics manufacturers like Sony and Philips are very active in this area. In fact, the basic hardware technology was invented by Sony and Philips, and so I think you'll see offerings from them as well.
How much of an impact do you think the Japanese will have on the American market?
Well, a lot of the key technologies we use in personal computers, whether it's laser printers or LCD displays or plasma displays or advanced chip technology, are inventions that came from Japan. So they're already having a very, very strong impact, even though it's only a small percentage of the machines are actually manufactured in Japan. And I don't think we'll see that change. In fact, it's the Korean-based machines that are actually more price competitive than the ones out of Japan, particularly with the exchange rate doing what it's done. But I think you will continue to see a lot of the fundamental technical advances coming from Japan.
What do you think is the impact with this huge clone market? Because at the show, at least three of the halls were just filled with 286 clones, even 386 clones.
Well, I think it's great that end users have a lot of choices in those machines. You know, there's, of course, a range of these manufacturers, people like Compaq or DEC or HP, you know, are putting a lot more into the game than just their PC. But because the PC is so central, they have to participate in that. I mean, the PC has become the focus of computing. Some of those other manufacturers compete on the basis of price, and there's a lot of, you know, people going up, a lot of people going down. I think part of what's reflected there is it is very easy to get in and manufacture a PC. You don't have to build a huge factory or anything. The pieces can be picked up from a variety of sources. So I think it's a healthy trend, even though some of those companies won't do as well.
You've been viewed as a visionary in this field, and indeed you are. What do you think will happen about 10, 15 years from now, and how do you think it will affect culture the way we know it today?
The idea that we're in the information age, I think, is very correct. And you know, putting information in electronic form so you can get at it very easily really changes how we learn and how a lot of businesses work. I think the idea that at your fingertips there'll essentially be this world network of data that, you know, even say sitting at home, you can call up information, whether it's, you know, music or video you want to get at, or the latest stock information or weather, is very fantastic. I also think that people underestimate what we can do with all the computing power we're going to have. I mean, as I say, the semiconductor industry isn't clearly can deliver magic at the same rate they have for the next 10 years. And that means that we'll be able to synthesize, whether it's flight simulation or, you know, taking you someplace you're not, or putting actors that you like into the scene, or synthesizing you into the scene. I mean, we will be able to create digital presentations, video and audio, that should change entertainment quite a bit. I mean, I think interactive entertainment will win out over passive entertainment. And I think the idea of, you know, sitting at work and finding out what's going on and, you know, making the right decisions for your company, that'll be a far different, you'll have a far different way of going about it when we have this world network of information. We make it easy to get at that data.
One of the things I found is that there's a generation gap in computing itself. Like, I have a 13-year-old, and there are many of those of the same age where they are very, very computer literate, and my wife is almost half the depth of the computer. How do we ever overcome that?
Well, that's a real problem. Computers today, you know, to learn things like what's a file, what's a disk, and, you know, what are these weird commands, you have to go through a period where you're really confused, and young people seem to be more willing to persevere when it's all confusing and get to the point where they form a model in the head of what all are these things, whereas older people, even though they're very, very capable, they kind of say, oh, I'm not made for computers. And certainly with the amount of computer usage in the schools, that, you know, just reinforces this situation. People coming out of college today, such a high percentage have used PCs and view that as the way you get things done. You know, there's a lot that can be done to improve this. We are making the machines easier to use, I think, you know, a lot of people are recognizing that they should make the effort to go and learn the machines. I put a little time in and got my parents using the machine, and now they're off on their own and, you know, enjoying it a great deal.
Is it possible that we may end up having a hammer effect? In other words, to put a nail into a board, you would use a hammer, and sometimes people use a hammer to put a screwdriver in the board, and sometimes people use a hammer to break the board in half, so that we may be so concentrated on the use of a personal computer as a universal tool that it may not really be a proper fit for what we should be using it for.
Well, because it's a general-purpose device and you just put different software in, and the software industry is very, very competitive, I mean, I think if there's, you know, some different way they ought to be used, the industry will figure that out and come around to it.
Microsoft Windows is one of those products that makes it easier to use a personal computer. Do you think there will be more functional features, and maybe other authors will be looking at Microsoft Windows as a benchmark of how things should be built?
Well, we believe that Microsoft Windows will be a standard in the same way that MS-DOS is. That is, it will be on over 90% of the PC-type machines, and that future applications eventually will all be built on top of that, because graphics interface is a lot better. And what you've seen is month by month we get, you know, additional applications, additional drivers, changing over the base standard from MS-DOS to the MS-DOS plus Windows. Takes a great deal of time, and I do think, though, that people in industry see that trend and are moving their future investments in the direction of Windows.
Do you think Windows will spawn a real growth in artificial intelligence?
Well, the graphic interface allows you to present information very nicely, so you can think of it as almost like the syntax, the presentation layer. We do need to also improve the layer below that, the semantic layer, and artificial intelligent techniques are the key to that. So in the sense that once we get graphics interface, we will have done as much as we can at just the presentation layer, and to make things really easier, like take a spreadsheet, to make it so you don't have to learn formulas and cells and, you know, dependencies and things like that. We're going to have to change the semantics of the software underneath. The techniques that come to us from the artificial intelligence community are the key to that. Really allowing the computer to learn the same way that a human assistant would, and letting you specify things with, you know, very, well, less precise but easily understood constructs.
What about issues of data security? Because as the personal computer becomes more readily available, it becomes more distributed, and information tends not to be as so tightly controlled.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues we're going to have to deal with. The fact is that today information is protected very nicely. You know, if you see some stranger going up to somebody else's desk and start rifling through the drawers, you're going to, you know, go up to them and say, "Hey, what's going on?" But the electronic equivalent of that isn't as noticeable, and this will become a very key issue. Even, you know, for electronic mail, you don't want everybody to read all the mail that's going around. I think we will come up with solutions, but there are going to be some people who are surprised that they haven't protected their data, and that's a real problem.
You brought up electronic mail. That's interesting because today in the corporate environment, you have deck mail and Wang mail, and they don't talk to each other, and we wish they were able to tap into each other. What about standards? How should we go about setting or abiding by standards on an international basis with other countries and other organizations?
Well, there is certainly a lot of work going on in that area. In fact, the electronic mail one is a very good example to pick because the work that's going on is very concrete and it's excellent work. It's under this so-called X.400 group that's a standard from the International Standards Organization, ISO. So I'm very optimistic in that particular case. We'll have a world standard and we'll get those things connected together. Not just so you can send mail, but also so you can look up names and use group names and you know, make a very efficient interface to the mail system. Some of the other areas like document formats or networking standards, they haven't made as much progress, although there's some effort going on there. You get this complex interplay between people who want proprietary standards, between these open standards, and also you have the moving technology, and so it's sometimes bad to pin down a standard when you know, there's going to be a better way of doing things to come along. I do think, though, that all the manufacturers recognize the need for standards, and here in the United States, a number of them got together and formed what they call the Corporation for Open Systems, I think that body will help move this problem forward quite a bit.
What do you think the direction is going to be for robotics?
Well, the founder of Atari, Nolan Bushnell, is probably the most optimistic about this. He guarantees me that in 3 years, I'll have a robot go to my refrigerator and get a beer for me and bring it back to me. I think that's a little difficult. The problem isn't that motors cost a lot or that, you know, the physical body of the robot. You know, stepping motors are pretty cheap. These little laser devices that can detect distances are quite good. The tough thing is that the environment, whether it's the office or home environment, the environment you have as far as how you maneuver around and what you do when something surprises you really requires a lot of knowledge about what's going on. And humans are awfully good at a lot of things, and navigating around is definitely one of those. So I'm less optimistic that robots will have a big impact in at least the next 3 or 4 years.
What about the area of process control?
Well, certainly there, you know, the idea of a robot is broader. Any sort of moving arm is a type of robot, and there it will have a significant impact. I mean, it already is having a major impact on a number of manufacturing tasks.
Let's move forward, if possible, in the next 20, 30 years. Do you think gallium arsenide ever get off the ground?
Well, we need as I said, the semiconductor industry for the next 10 years, just using silicon, is going to be able to do chips that are twice as good every 2 years. Out at that point, you start to get a problem in terms of how large the atomic structures are, because they're just very few atoms thick. And it's possible that gallium arsenide will help us push that horizon out. There's a number of technologies that aren't mainstream today, like gallium arsenide, that are being explored so that when we get to limits of silicon, we won't have to stop. But none of those, I don't believe any of those will come into the mainstream for at least 7 or 8 years.
Talk about the mainstream. Microsoft seems to be in the mainstream of the personal computing industry from the beginning till now. Pulling this back a little, I read in the papers the other day that you are now the number one software company. You are the biggest, at least in revenues and also in profits. Are you on target?
Well, it's not such a concern to us who's number one. In fact, there's two other software companies, Lotus and Ashton Tate, that are about the same size. And, you know, from quarter to quarter, one will be bigger, one will be smaller. That's not really how we measure ourselves. The key for us is that this vision we have of making the PC better and getting it onto more and more desktops, that we really make progress on that. And we participate both at the system software level and the applications level. At the system software level, with MS-DOS and Windows and their evolutions, we play a very critical role in this industry. And even, you know, the other major software companies come to us and get the idea about what foundation they'll be building on. And so that's a role of great responsibility. It's also very exciting because it lets us really inaugurate a lot of new capabilities and really set a direction for the industry. For example, in the way that we're doing for CD-ROM.
Well, we're going to wrap this up, but might you have any final words for us?
Well, this Comdex, I think, is, although there were less surprising products here, it is a real milestone in that this Intel MS-DOS standard is showing, you know, incredible strength where people are being innovative, whether it's with portables or 386 machines or you know, a variety of ways the machines get used. And I think it's fantastic for users that there is this standard and all this choice out there.
Well, thank you very much, Bill, for taking the time out from your very busy schedule and to be able to share your insights with us.
Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, I wanted to get your take on this. So I wanted to kind of understand where you're coming from. All of this stuff in regards to artificial intelligence, and it's going to take over all of our jobs tomorrow, and it's going to put us all, it's going to destroy the world as we know it, all of that blah blah blah
for thousands.
Can you tell where my world is, where I think it is?
Yeah, well, look, for thousands of years we've had a lot of artificial intelligence in the workplace. It was just human.
Yeah We've got people, artificial intelligence in Washington D.C. too, but
It's people who pretended to be smarter than they were, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of tricks for that. And why is it any different when you go to programming? Programmers can make something seem to smart. In fact, go back to the Magic 8 Ball.
All signs point to
model, but you know, yeah. Look, tons of money. Money is the reason for the AI boom. Everybody thinks they're going to invest and make it. Everybody thinks they're going to announce something and make it. Hordes of companies.
They're going to come up with a killer app. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chasing the gold rush. Hordes of end users. Well, I can't exactly speak for them, but many of them seem to see it as a crutch to fill in the blanks when they're less than fully confident in some skill set.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, some see it as a contemporary parallel to cheating on their homework.
Yes.
Yeah, and some just like the glitz and cool of something that sounds like it should be glitzy and cool.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say that AI is still 10 miles short of ready.
Okay, yeah.
All right, here's the math behind that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple. You've all heard it before. A miss is as good as a mile.
Yeah.
So 10 miles mean 10 misses. And here are 10 misses that you may want to consider.
All right.
Misapplication.
Mm-hmm.
Mischief. Misdiagnosis.
Huh?
Misinformation.
Oh, my.
Misinterpretation.
What?
Misrepresentation.
This is Marty Winston. My name is Benjamin. No, whatever. Yes, go on.
Misstatement.
Yes.
Mistakes.
Yeah.
Misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And misuse.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
This isn't a church sermon. I'm not going to explain each one because they all loop back to the fact that AI is created by people, not gods.
Yeah.
Yeah. People make mistakes. Don't always analyze consequences.
Sure.
May not be aware of the ways in which their software may be ignorant of nuances or alternate contexts. And they have as hard a time as anybody figuring out what information sources contain truths, lies, blather, and accidental or deliberate errors.
Yeah, and we've been seeing a lot of that. We've been, just as we go along, we keep seeing how, okay, this AI, after you leave it alone for an hour, it all of a sudden it says it has its plans to take over the world. or like you ask it something and it will tell you flat out, this is the truth. And you find out, oh, no, it isn't.
Well, what about the Russian intervention in our elections?
Okay.
That is a mix of AI and non-AI mimicry of what the AI is doing.
Sure. Malicious. People putting stuff into the quote-unquote AI, various nuances, biases, and more that spin in whatever direction that the programmers wanted to go in.
Indeed. Now, listen, folks, this is important.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that programmers are always going to get it right, if you think that no one will ever make a mistake, I'm going to bring in a notable personage from history. If you never, ever heard of Wrong Way Corrigan, look him up.
Okay.
He took off. He was a pilot. He took off from Brooklyn, New York on a flight to Long Beach, California. And on that flight, he landed in Ireland.
I had no idea. I mean, I've heard the reference Wrong Way Corrigan, but I hadn't realized. Okay. So how did he get that one wrong? Because like from New York to Long Beach, I'm very familiar with Long Beach airport. I've flown into there many times. It's crossing a bunch of land, like a lot of land. And Ireland is crossing a lot of not land, a lot of the Atlantic Ocean.
Right, but if you take off and it's cloudy or foggy or you're flying above that kind of thing, or if it's night, you know, you may not know that right away. Sure, you're going to hear more seagulls if you go toward Ireland.
Wow.
It's that kind of thing. Anyway, just for fun.
Yeah.
Let's go through those 10 misses that keep AI 10 miles away.
Okay.
In alphabetical order.
All right.
Misapplication.
Mm-hmm.
Mischief.
Mm-hmm.
Misdiagnosis, misinformation, misinterpretation, misrepresentation, misstatement, mistakes, misunderstanding, and misuse.
And those are all things that AI will give you, all kinds of different things that all of the different companies that own their supposed AI products are going to give you. This is... Yeah,
it's flawed, and anybody who wants to find a flaw can. Why don't you go looking?
I've enjoyed using AI here and there, but I also use it with a very cautious. Yeah, this isn't going to be quite right.
I love the way Microsoft's pushing theirs on you every time you go to Bing.
And
every time I try it, it disappoints me.
Fair enough. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, and that is Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer Club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, June the 7th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The King's Bite Computer Club meets Tuesday, June the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and they meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant, 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. The New York Amateur Computer Club has a presentation, Digital Forensics for Fun and Profit, presentation by Dr. Rebecca Mercury. Thursday, June the 13th, meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, June the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is limac.org. Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, June the 27th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting. Website is bcug.com. TED Ed Connect, Thursday, July the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is wpcug.org. Happy computing! Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to Hank at pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.